Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Jim O'Malley, James A. O'Malley, a graduate of National University of Ireland and New York Law School, has been handling U.S. immigration matters for more than 25 years, and in fact, he is the go-to lawyer for Irish immigrants, not just Irish immigrants, but Jim, as I welcome you as a friend, Jim from Limerick, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Adrian. It's always a pleasure to speak to you on air or anywhere else.
Jim, there is, and again, I know, and many people know, that when I say you're the go-to guy, you are, because you have basically, that you are an immigration attorney. And having a clientele of, multicultural reach, as you have, you must, in fact, and your law firm must be inundated these days, these early days of the new presidency and the new administration, with a lot of calls from people who are quite nervous and who have a multitude of questions, most of which I would assume you or anybody else is not in a position to answer this early in the game. Would that be fairly accurate?
Yeah, that's a very good synopsis, Adrian, of what's actually happening literally as we speak. There's a lot of disappointment. There's a lot of nervousness and paranoia creeping into communities. Generally, I would say that the in order of sort of concern, the nervousness is sort of compounded by the fact that there was such hope coming up to the elections of November, and that hope has just been dissipated, and there's confusion, nervousness, paranoia. There's a sort of an unknown factor that is that nobody really knows, but what exactly will happen or what is happening. But the sense is that it might not be all good.
Yeah. I would say that probably the press will have a heyday with the subject of immigration, but I'm afraid actually that most of the coverage that we will hear will be regarding the sanctuary cities, the sanctuary cities where undocumented immigrants have for good reason felt quite safe, and that is what the major focus will be on. First of all, can you address that in terms of, what is what's real, what is likely? If anybody knew what was real versus likely, we get a prize. But how do you see that in terms of the severity of the threat?
Well, first of all, I suppose I should say we're not really sure what will happen. There's been a lot of talk. A lot of it sounds like bluster. A lot of it sounds like hot air, I suppose. But a lot of it, the opinions of what will be done or should be done, can be done, it sounds like it's undoable. Now, having said that, that's no consolation. Through throughout the campaign, when the issue of immigration was raised in debates, it was a very black and white kind of a dialogue.
Yes.
That illegal immigration was bad, period. That, end of story.
Right. Go ahead.
We have to do something because the system is broken. That was the other side of the coin. It's illegal immigration and the undocumented problem exists because the system was broken from day one. And there's a lot of accuracy in that thesis. On the other side, it was no, illegal immigration is bad. It has to be terminated and end of story. Now, these are two sides of really the same issue, and neither is absolutely correct one way or the other. Neither one is achievable overnight either.
Right.
The last time there was a major overhaul of the immigration system was in 1986.
Yes.
And before that was 1952. So these things build up over decades and often over generations. And for many decades and many generations, the immigration system was ignored, for want of a better word. It was ignored, and there was a very laissez-faire attitude towards it. It was kind of survival of the fittest and stuff like this. Of course, 9/11 changed all that, and after 9/11, the immediate focus went on in a very defensive mode. That defensiveness built up into the meltdown of the economy in the 2008. That defensiveness built up across Middle America, where politicians were able to exploit it. And exploited in a very cynical way, not at all in a helpful way or a positive way. Nobody can doubt and nobody can argue with the fact that this country is made up of immigrants and was built by immigrants from day one. On the other hand, Americans want a system. They always want everything has to work according to a system, and that has been a hallmark, and has been the envy of the world that things worked here according to a system, the laws, the economy, society. So there are many forces at play here, and no real easy. And no really the definition of what's going on. Dialogue is needed across the on all sides, and it's such an emotional issue.
Yeah, well, you know, the more information we get on practically any of the subjects and topics, and over the last few days, the more confusing it seems to be. But I would like to just run a couple of what I have heard and seen with respect to what President Trump has said. Recently, we all know that he had said that all 11 million undocumented immigrants were out the door the first day he was at foot in the White House. That got diluted to, if not then, it might be, let's start somewhere and take away the rights of immigrants who, in fact, had children here in the United States. That seemed to be a very radical move. I believe that was the ACA, the DACA. Then, in the midst of the pronouncements over the last couple of days, there was a point, and if I didn't hear this correctly, please you correct me, where he said, "Don't that undocumented immigrants needn't worry, because who they really want to do are those who are involved in felonies, and that they should be booted out.
This is correct, yes.
So,
and this is precisely also there was very little difference in the Obama presidency and the Obama administration on the same issue. Even the sanctuary city movement, and just to clarify, I'm sorry, you did ask me about the sanctuary city issue, and I went in a long roundabout discussion, but the sanctuary cities essentially are places, usually urban and cities, that
right.
where the local law enforcement are under orders not to cooperate with the federal immigration police, which are called the ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement,
right.
In order to enforce immigration violation laws, deportation laws, against people who are otherwise law-abiding.
Right.
That's the whole idea of sanctuary cities. And the opposite to a sanctuary city is a place or a city or a state or a municipality where the local police will in fact also enforce immigration policy and law.
And many of them, U.S. immigration attorney who I'm speaking with, friends, if you just joined us, most of the law enforcement non-sanctuary areas seem to be quite aggressive. It's not just that they happen to come across somebody who's breaking the law, but they seem like they take some particular, brownie points from turning over. So you have the two extremes that are there, but I interfered with your flow there. Tell us though about how serious a threat that will be in terms of again the sanctuary cities, or is that something that they're going to be kicking around for the next couple of years? We shouldn't pay that much attention to it.
Well, I think we should pay certainly in our community we should pay a lot of attention to it. It's a highly political and politicized issue, and the enforcement of the immigration laws falls to the federal immigration police, the ICE, it's called.
Right.
Whether a state or a municipality will cooperate or not seems to be within that municipality's own rights. So that I don't think they're compelled to do so.
Mm. But it comes with a cost, obviously.
Yeah, there's a cost, and there's what we have seen in happen is that a lot of the local police in state, in municipalities, in states, in towns, and they don't want to have to cooperate. Not that they're champions of the undocumented or anything, but it causes huge logistical problems for a police force,
right,
to have to get involved with essentially an area that's an area of civil law. The police of this country have a hard enough job, and every policeman and every police captain and every police superintendent will back this up, and they've been known to say mm-hmm. this, and that they have enough to deal with, and often too much to deal with, fighting crime.
Yeah.
Whereas having to enforce immigration laws on top of that, it gets into
right.
There's a cost. There's a political cost. There's a monetary cost, and there's an emotional and a moral cost. Because what happens is, like it or not, racial profiling starts to creep into the issue.
Yeah.
The sheriff in Arizona was a perfect example. He and his men would this was the sheriff Arpaio, and he and his deputies, they would single out Hispanic-looking individuals, and if they turned right on a wrong sign, or if they had a taillight out, they were all over them. And the first thing they asked were for immigration papers.
Right.
Now this kind of stuff is a gross waste of resources to begin with.
Absolutely, and it is. I think even it is totally un-American. That's not what we represent.
Absolutely, and the police, every police man I think in this country would say the same thing, that no, that's they didn't become police, they didn't join the police force to do this. They joined the police force to fight crime, and that's what everybody wants them
to
do.
You know, they're not they're not second fiddle representatives of the federal government. They didn't choose that either.
Exactly, and I think that's. Whether it's called sanctuary cities or whatever, I think we will see a resistance to that.
Yeah.
Now, again, the current president has signed, I believe, an executive order to banish or to outlaw sanctuary cities.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I think, again, this is bluster. It's not the sanctuary nature of this issue is not going to go away. Because the president has signed an executive order.
Yeah, well, God knows he's been busy signing off on a number of things, and I'm trying very hard not to inject any politics into this, though.
Yes. But if we go back to the reason, again, the sanctuary cities and the whole issue of the sanctuary movement, it's really a symptom of how broken the immigration system became. And it just goes back to a system that has been, it didn't move with the times, it didn't move with the general movement of labor and the general movement of the economy. Most of the people here who are undocumented are hardworking people who are here to work because the work is here. They didn't come, none of us came here for the scenery, Adrian. We have plenty of that at home, right?
Yeah.
So. The people come here not to, not to be undocumented. They come to because the work is here, and it is here. So it really becomes now we get into a socio-economic issue that there's lots of work. So who's going to do that work? And why don't we set up a system where it shouldn't be rocket science to create a system where somebody is willing to do a job, so let them do that job and have peace of mind and live here with their family and get on with it. Unemployment is at an all-time low right now after eight tremendous years of coming back from a near depression. So,
I just want to ask you on one particular area where, you know, a lot of times, and, you know, you and your firm have been to the forefront in acquiring all types of visas for immigrants, particularly from Ireland. The construction industry now, say in New York City, if the reports are anyway accurate, and if they're not, try to find a few blocks in New York City without scaffolding. And,
You're right.
And it is there. Now, is there a pathway, is there a legal pathway to bring, immigrants, again, perhaps on the engineering level, or for that matter, for the laborers? Many would say that even it is now difficult to get laborers to keep up with the pace of, the new construction in New York City. Just taking that as an example, how is that going to be affected now? if, in fact, the rhetoric coming from the Oval Office is saying everybody better clear out. So there has to be some fallback. And is there anything in that for, say, our community?
Yes, I think there is indeed. In fact, in recent months, I've been approached by many construction companies, engineering companies, architectural companies, to try to help them to find qualified people, because I'm in the business of doing visas,
right.
And I have been working with some companies, with the institutes at home and the third level institutes of technology, to create a type of mentorship between a network of companies here that might be that some have Irish connections, some are totally Irish owned, some are owned by Irish immigrants that came here many years ago, myself, and built up a business, and are now very successful and very busy. And yes, there is a pathway to obtaining valid employment-related visas. They are not green cards, and they're not green cards that happen overnight. But there is a way. There are time-limited visas for 12 months, 18 months, 3 years, that are given specifically to employers specifically for this reason, to bring people here that if they have work for them, if it will benefit their career, and it's a very good program.
Now,
a lot of this goes unnoticed and unknown, and in years gone by, people didn't do their homework in advance and just came here and overstayed, and that built up the numbers of the undocumented.
Yes, and that's how you wind up with 11 million, generally speaking. Now, what about there are a tremendous number of, Irish owned businesses, including maybe particularly in the construction area. When we think of getting working visas, J-1 visas, we tend to think of just the mega huge companies. But what about the smaller construction companies, Irish owned, that are, crying out for those who want to work to keep up with the demand for new building? Could small companies, as you see it, can they petition? And what is the risk involved for them? Is there anything in it for them to fear?
Absolutely not. The general rule with the employment visas, whether they're internship visas, career enhancement visas, professional work visas, the general rule is that the company must be a legitimate company, must have a position that's legitimately available for the person, and must pay the person something, must cover them for insurance, all the usual things hiring any employee. And as long as there are different programs, there are programs for short-term internship visas, there are programs for longer-term internship visas up to 18 months.
Right.
The number, the size of the company theoretically doesn't matter, as long as it's a company where that person is in a real employment, legitimate employment status, and is learning something for their career and is working legitimately. Some of the visa offices, because they're handled by different offices throughout the country, depending on the location of the employer, and some of them have a rule that if there are at least four or five domestic employees, then they can do at least one visa. Now, it's not a hard and fast rule, but it's a sort of a rule of thumb that if a company has, more than five regular American or American-based employees, and is up to date in its taxes and it's doing everything the right way under workers' comp, et cetera, et cetera,
yeah.
then they're entitled to petition a visa for any foreign person that has qualifications that match their industry.
Right. Now, there are two aspects of what we have discussed here that I would like to clear up. First of all, the term intern, excuse the pun, has a connotation of a freebie. You're lucky to get in the door, and how you pay for your lunch or your lodging is none of our business. But in fact, interns can, and in most cases, are paid, and in many cases, where there is an employer, such as a construction industry owner, they're very happy to, in addition to, having somebody on a visa, on a legal visa, they're quite happy to pay them the going rate.
Absolutely. In fact, the internship visa program, there are two or three different programs, internship visa programs. They're generally either the J-1s for summer, the J-1s post-graduation, or the 18-month longer-term J-1s, or the H-3s. In fact, all of these programs require that the employer provide the normal benefits to the intern as they would any
right.
American. They must be covered with a workers' comp. They must, for most part, they must be covered for liability insurance.
Absolutely. Right,
and
yeah.
All this stuff. And they can, and they generally, they don't have to be paid by law for the internship, but the visa office would much prefer that
yes.
the person is paid a normal wage consistent with the cost of living in that city.
And in fact, that would be part of the evaluation when the employer, applies for, the visa, the immigrant visa to
yes,
begin
it, yes,
with. So it's
yes,
not,
it is.
It does not become this. It's not something that's at the discretion of, bringing an employer, bringing somebody over here and paid for the first week and then say, okay.
No, and,
okay.
and it's monitored constantly, and it is part of the application process. If some of the internship programs, even the very short ones, if they're like a month or something like that,
yeah.
then the visa office will say, well, if this person is not being paid for that, they must show that they have their own resources.
Yeah.
But
okay.
if it's anything more than that, the visa office would not be happy to see that the person was not earning something consistent with the cost of living. Now, if you do an internship visa in the city of New York, that will be a different salary type of requirement
right.
than if we did one in Des Moines, Iowa, for example,
yes. okay.
because the cost of living is different.
Right.
I mean, this is quite common sense. So, we have helped companies all over the United States
yes,
with these,
and I know
these
you,
programs.
Yeah, I know you do. And lastly, since, we are going to have many conversations as things change in Washington here, but I would like, though, to clarify one aspect of it and say, what would you say to those who are approaching a panic state now, those who were reasonably comfortable? I don't think anybody can be uncomfortable or can be comfortable in an undocumented status, regardless of who's in or what administration is there. But what would your advice be for those who are saying doomsday is here, the apocalypse?
Well, the first thing I would say is just try to get information, correct information. There's a lot of rumor spinning now, and there's a lot of, like we said earlier, there's a lot of paranoia, but there's a lot of rumor and there's a lot of misinformation. And in our community, just to go, the people at the Emerald Isle in Woodside and in the
Passing Irish Centre, yes.
Passing Irish Centre, they do a wonderful job. Siobhan Dennehy is a fantastic person. She runs a great organisation.
Right.
There's counterparts in different cities, in Boston, I know, in San Francisco, in Chicago. That's a great starting point. Just go and find out. Find out they have staff on site. They have, if they can't help immediately, if there's something drastic or urgent or something like that, they will point the person in the right direction.
Yes.
We and many of my colleagues, we give our time on a pro bono basis to the organizations, as I do, especially to the Emerald Isle and the Ashling Center. And there's plenty of resources there. There's no substitute for it. I mean, panic. Right. The first rule is don't panic. I know it might sound easy to say.
Yeah.
But information is the key here, and misinformation is the culprit.
Yeah, that's a good note to end on, Jim O'Malley, because it is the misinformation that makes a bad situation worse.
Absolutely.
There is a bad situation, and let us hope that it, first of all, that it doesn't get worse. But more important than that is that people keep their heads, you know, level at this point. All of this, the hype of the last week, is in fact, it is very upsetting. Not just it's upsetting to everybody, but it's not all a done deal, and I think there would be tremendous resistance, and particularly in the area of the undocumented. And if in our community, with all we have invested in, you know, the in helping the undocumented, if we're not able to handle this one, or at least show strength, well, then God help the rest of them. Because
absolutely, I agree 100%, Adrian.
Jim, again, I want to thank you. Your law firm is in New York City, and you're located actually down downtown at on Broadway, right?
Correct. We're in Lower Manhattan on Broadway, right near, very near the City Hall, near the World Trade Center, that area.
And your website, for those who may want to find out more about what you're doing and have done.
O'MalleyImmigrationLaw.com. That's us. There's a lot of info on our website and how to contact us. And we try to put bulletins on as news comes in. We're having a hard time keeping up with it now.
It's a good place to start. It's O'Malley, O-M-A-L-L-E-Y, immigration, I-M-M-I-G-R-A-T-I-O, and law, all one word, .com//attorneys. Jim, my friend, and indeed for those and for the thousands that you and your company and your law firm have helped, again, thank you for joining us today. And hopefully things will get better.
Thanks very much, Adrian. Always a pleasure.
Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.